Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And each week I'm joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team. And even though this is a special, and we'll come on to that in a moment, it's still the same. We've got the wonderful John Curtis.
Hello, darlings. Are you well?
Well, I am. Let's see if our guests are. So, and you'll notice the plural in guests there, everybody. Yes, indeed. We are doing two at once. It's quite exciting. And we've got, put your eyebrows down, Mr. Parker. So we have got the lovely Richard Parker and James Dewhurst from Webfleet, a gold sponsor of ours, everybody. Very good. Welcome both.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, it is great to be here. You should be very grateful.
We are grateful, very grateful to be in the presence of gods.
Right. No, that's not true. I'm going to dodge lightning bolts in a minute if we accept that. So this is a special, as I mentioned before. As you will have heard recently, if you've been listening to our podcast, you will have heard, and I'm doing this in faith because we haven't actually had that conversation yet in reality, but we will be speaking about the Green Fleet EV Rally, where we carried out 1,500 miles or thereabouts, and the guys will give us the exact minutiae very shortly, 1,500 miles across 5 days in a mix of bikes, cars, vans, and even up to 42-ton trucks. Quite phenomenal. And we've got a plethora of data to go at. And that's what you guys do, isn't it, James?
Yeah, I mean, data's been an integral part of everything that Webfleet has done for, well, we're now celebrating this year 25 years. But I think we see more and more now that data is, as they say, the new oil, but needs refining, you know, otherwise, you know, you can't do anything with it. So sometimes it's just about how quickly we get to that data and what we do with it is the challenge. So, yeah, it's massive, you know, in terms of everything that's being delivered, but we're constantly changing, constantly evolving. So we're really looking forward to having a chat with everybody here today because, you know, this team and part of the team of the EV Rally were just vital for its success.
Indeed. Richard, tell us what you did for the EV Rally.
What, me personally?
No, as Webfleet. I'm not interested in you.
Oh, it's all about me, isn't it? What we did. Okay, so as the data sponsors for the EV Rally, you know, we offer up the opportunity for any member taking part to install, you know, our hardware to get data out that helps them see how they're performing through the rally, as well as create a little bit of competition. It's also worth remembering that whilst the EV Rally is very much around sustainability, that does go hand in hand with safety on the roads. And a key marker for the Green Fleet Rally is actually being safe. And the word rally doesn't mean that it is WRC. You know, it's about that. So, you know, so part of our responsibility is we created a bit of competition. And every year it sort of builds year on year and through the week. The excitement of teams wanting to know where they are and everything is a key part of the fun aspect of the rally as well. But I'll no doubt talk about some of the results later, but it was quite phenomenal this year, actually, some of what we saw.
So let's have a look at some of the numbers, Richard. We were talking about 50 plus vehicles, 1,400 miles, a team of 110, 120 in total. That went around the UK on an A to Z based journey from the AA in Oldbury. I think we managed to get to X and Exeter and then back to Chester.
There was some poetic license used in some of them.
It was brutal from a physical perspective, wasn't it? Let's just talk about the human side of this first. You know, 57 vehicles. Drivers, maybe 100 drivers across the piece. It was hard, hard going. People think that this is just a jolly for a few days. Yeah. It wasn't, was it?
God, no, it absolutely isn't. You know, and like you said, to Paul mentioned the breadth of vehicles that took place. You know, yes, there was the cars with that are there in the modern world with substantial range, and perhaps that was more straightforward. But you look at what Sam did on the bike. you know, and the hours in the saddle, and not just that, the planning that he had to do to even have a smidge of a chance of getting around that without significant issues, and you know, the 12 and 13 hour days that he had, you know, lost my train of thought. So where am I going with this? So everyone does look outwardly in and think this is a lot of fun. And, you know, that's part of our job to make this watchable and make it something worthwhile. But inside of it, every day people are coming back to the hotel at 8 o'clock at night and they'll get a bite to eat. And the next thing they're doing is, right, well, where do we start tomorrow? How do we get, you know, through the days? Where do we need to plan, as well as doing the drop-ins at all the, you know, the stops that are planned, you know.
And Richard, you talked about it being relatively easy for cars. And I think part of what we did this year was tested new vehicles and vehicles in real world situations. So there was a 9-year-old Tesla with 250,000 miles on it. There was the van that you drove that had a load on it of half a ton. We tried new vehicles from Czech Republic, the Spartan 2.0, I seem to recall, which looks like a G-Wagon that's electric. It's awesome. What did we learn from this whole thing? Because there were an awful lot of data points that you must have gathered on those different vehicle types.
Yeah, I think, and different outcomes for different like vehicles that we're doing. So let's go back to, you know, the Tesla Model S that was sort of 250,000 miles on it. You know, the energy consumption data that came out of that was really quite remarkable, that it's still overall, the whole rally achieved 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour. It still had sort of 10% regen on you know, 10% of total energy consumption was put back, you know, and that has something to do with the drivers. Don't get me wrong. There's an experience, but I think, you know, the message from that was, do you know what? Secondhand vehicles have a real role to play and are capable of doing, you know, perhaps a lot more than even an ICE vehicle. Where if you think about a comparable diesel vehicle at 180,000 miles on the clock, you rarely see them on the road. Well, actually, if EVs can go to 250 and still be on the same motors, still be on the same batteries, then that to me is a really good benchmark for potentially the longevity of these vehicles through the different ownership cycles. And then you've got, our van, you know, like it's not a van that was built to do the work that we put it through. And we achieved that, and it was good. But actually, we learned some really interesting stuff about how that vehicle performed in charging and discharging its state of charge, which perhaps went slightly against the convention of what you'd expect or what you'd commonly talk around between the 20 and 80%. And we found actually its performance lay much better in using it in a different way. And so if I bring that back to sort of the data thing, I've taken that back to our business already and go, actually, how do we help new users of electric vehicles understand the particular nuances of that vehicle in terms of respect to their own businesses and how we might work it and plan things? So yeah, huge amount of bits of new stuff that again adds to our growing knowledge about how these vehicles operate for business and in the consumer world.
And James, I think it's a really good point actually, that you're already thinking about how do we use this data, because you're not just leaving it as data, you're refining as you use that oil is the new oil, right? It's the oil of the 21st century, data. And you're refining it and you're producing. How do you see, before we go into the facts and figures, how do you see your role within the marketplace as Webfleet moving forward in that way with this wealth and, you know, gold mine of data that you've got?
Well, I guess our portals are often ways of collecting that data and presenting it, but they start off in the cloud, and then, you know, everything is in there in such a large proportion. How do you disseminate it? How do you drill it down? The difference is, you know, and all the platforms we're starting to see out now come out from software providers is about how do you take that data? How do you make it meaningful? How do you present it with insights? But then also it's about how do you communicate it to the stakeholders that are using that system, or maybe even in our case, we want to communicate with the drivers. It's not just about, you know, how we get it to the fleet managers and how we get to the finance people, because they already have a vested interest in it. What we found, and with the rally especially, you know, we look at what Richard and Stephen did in the van, they are experienced EV drivers, and they knew what they had to do. They knew how to plan it, and they went for a plan and they proved it. What we did with the car was we actually brought people from our organization that hadn't touched an electric vehicle before. And we saw this with, I think it was Sean from Mighty in the second year, you know, how he had never been, he'd just been thrown the keys to a van and, you know, and had to learn where we went from there. And it wasn't until day three, I think we taught him about regen. The same thing happened because I didn't join the first day, I joined the second day. And I asked the guys how they were getting on with regen. And they went, well, what's regen? So we had to start that kind of conversation again. And actually then we were able to show them by doing that, they were able to improve the range. And then we set ourselves challenges on day three and four, you know, where we're actually one charge and extending that range to try and do, you know, 300 plus miles. Because actually the jeopardy that we sometimes see in sales fleets and with drivers is, you know, they say, oh, I can't have an electric vehicle because I've got to drive, you know, from London to Leeds and back, you know, and they don't think they can do it. Well, actually you can. And even if you can't, it's not a problem. So we're trying to get that data down to the drivers, whether it's through in-cab feedback or, you know, or maybe reporting or, you know, nudges, you know, that can happen in the cab to try and improve that. And that's part of the long-term game plan. It's about data for the fleet managers, but also data for the drivers in the right, meaningful way.
I think it's also about a bit of a mindset. So the development team that in which I sit and then we work, we're kind of going back and going, okay, look, we've lived in this world for quite some years now, and the language in which we operate, the environment in which we and how we charge a vehicle, we perhaps forget what it was like on day one when we learnt it. We're trying to adopt that mindset in the delivery of that information. If you're looking at this for the first time, how do you make it available in such a way that somebody who doesn't know this stuff, doesn't get frightened by it, can take it on board in small chunks that is good enough to absorb and roll with it through that? Because what we are seeing is quite a lot of people, you expect them to go from A to Z in one long jump, and then they go, actually, too much for me to get hold of. I'm going to kick that can away because I've got other things to worry about tomorrow. So I think our responsibilities with delivery of that information also sits with the right language in the right stakeholder.
So it's a really good point that around the driver's piece, because obviously we know that many people are invested as drivers in electric cars. But I still think that it's important to think about, to take your point exactly, Richard, about thinking about people driving electric for the first time. But vans as a market is really a long way off. And of course, I'm going to bring it back to my vans, but you drove a van. So
I drove a van, and you know, and we look at the registration figures for June to this year, you know, and we still are really just scratching the surface on it, you know.
And it's all because we don't have incentives for drivers, and we are not helping drivers accept those vehicles. So how can we had the AA with, of course, their Drive Tech, people kind of giving tips. Do you combine with that kind of approach and really bring some real engagement to the drivers to give them confidence so that they can get the very best out of the vehicles?
Yeah, we do. And we've got, you know, I've got a number of ways that we do it. We've got it through the drive, you know, we don't need to go to the details, but we've got the driver devices, you know, and they're clearly, now they already deliver much of the traditional stuff. But actually, there's a real sort of development phase that we're in at the moment, which we'll have, you know, very, very soon now, which is delivering really specific EV help direct to drivers, you know, in the moment of the event, you know, put it in eco mode, you know, do you need your aircon on? Are you accelerating too quick? All the things that could potentially erode some of that range that potentially they thought they were going to get out of it in the beginning of the day. So that's absolutely right. But actually, there's another element that's coming in, Paul, and I picked this up from our good friend SJ at OVO. And actually, in some ways, if you think about an organization and a fleet manager having to access every single driver to influence them or through even through a device, it's really quite hard. And actually, the success that she has had is through the middle management. And I don't think we regularly hear conversation about how do we educate the middle management. We talk about C-suite and we talk about driver, but there's a group in the middle where these drivers report into, And so actually some of what I'm also talking with, like with our guys internally, is how do we help middle management manage the driver as well as engage with them? You know, and I think that's quite an interesting thought process as well about the success of drivers, you know, in vehicles. The other thing that one of my our other clients has done really successfully, and they've seen a 17% increase in range in their four transits that they're running, is actually they've set up driver forums. And they've actually had really nice cultural cross-engagement through drivers and self-learning, you know, in the right way. And there's nothing, I guess, more powerful. A machine can tell you one thing, but your peer group can be far more influential sometimes as well in terms of hints and tips of how they got better performance out of it.
Yeah.
And some of those customers have also translated the information in a different way as well. So we give them the CO2 emissions from the vehicle and maybe the improvements they've made. And the savings they've done. But what some of our customers are doing is transferring that into the real world. So they might be telling them, you know, the equivalent of offsetting in terms of trees and those things, how many trees they would have to plant to make the efficiency savings they've done. And that sometimes hits home with people more than maybe if they saved the company a certain amount of money or, you know, the CO2 figure. It's putting it into a normalization in a real world.
And that's a really important thing that you've done. Is you've continued that carbon offsetting that you do with the EV rally and made that a climate positive event. How have you done that?
Well, the way we've done this is in a few phases. So a number of years ago, Webfleet decided that it wanted to offset its own emissions, you know, as part of its journey that it was trying to deliver. And We actually partnered with Just Dig It, we're an NGO that gave us this opportunity to kind of look at offsetting our own emissions. So we repopulated a whole area four times the size of Amsterdam that was able to able to kind of offset our own emissions because we hadn't got there yet in terms of our own energy efficiency and other areas. So. That was for stage one. We then, our CFO at the time, a chap called Mick Heal, decided he wanted to do something a bit different. So we launched Green Your Fleet, which was our own scheme that we offer to our customers where the customers can choose to offset the emissions of their own fleet. But it's not just a case of planting a few trees. The whole scheme is different in that it's also all about empowerment. It's about taking people back to the dry lands that are in Tanzania and repopulating them in a really strong, humane way. So you're actually giving people jobs. You know, you're bringing them back to the land that is derelict. You're repurposing the water in the land and you're regrowing it. So it's whenever we give our customers the kind of certificate that comes at the end of what they've done, it gives them all the information they can put into, you know, their newsletters or, you know, whether it be the CO2 reporting, etc. That will give them all of that kind of data. You know, and again, it's, yeah, so we saw that. And then it was about, I think it was the second EV rally. You know, I then came to them and said, well, could we do this for the EV rally? Because whilst we've got a great message we're spreading, we are also doing, in a way, an unnecessary thing. It's necessary for the reasons we're doing it, but we're doing it. There could be other ways of doing it. So at least this way, we're flipping on its head. We're making it climate positive and, you know, and giving that double message. And I think one thing that was also interesting was speaking to our friends at Power. You know, they were doing that with some of the cards. They're offsetting some of those in there. So it actually turns out we're probably double offsetting the event in many ways, which is great.
Well, and also just a shout out to Crisis as well. Not only going around helping the environment, but helping the people that are affected by it. And it's actually really lovely. I've been to Tanzania. I've been to a number of parts of Tanzania, actually, both up in the mountains, in some of the bigger cities, and it is stark the challenges that they have to face. And you know, giving into that environment and thinking about agriculture and how they can farm the land in a better way and doing it in a very positive way, it makes a sense. But there are those people out there, and this is for the group, I don't know what the answer is, that say carbon offsetting is just greenwashing or, you know, we're not doing it properly. But for me, I think if we're doing something positive out of this, and it's helping in the way that there's a human element to it as well, surely it's got to be good. I mean, it can't be greenwashing and negative, surely.
I agree. And some of it is, look, we don't have the perfect answer in any of this that we're doing. We're finding our way and going blindly through it, but at least do something. You know, yes. Just do something that contributes in a way to helping the planet get a little bit more stabilized, and, you know, and that the future can have a bit more certainty about it for it. So, you know, I say poo poo to them. At least I'm getting off, you know, getting off my backside and trying to make a difference in some small
way.
And actually, I think the same about the rally. I think the rally, for those that have done it now for each of its iterations, I think we are starting to ask, and what else? You know, can we do, you know, what else is this about? And we've seen like Lex do the crisis and lead on that. And, you know, we've got the Just Dig It. And it's trying to do, well, okay, we get this, but what else can we do to contribute and just add our little bit in outside of the core element of it?
What's really interesting, Richard, is that you're still learning with all of your experience and all of the data and all of the fleets that you speak to. You personally are still discovering things about the vehicles that you come into contact with. And we had a conversation on the rally where you were talking to me about the Toyota Pro-Ace City that you were driving.
Yeah.
And you touched on it earlier about how you're charging it differently when you were on the road, because you found that the battery was able to take charge better in certain states. Explain it better than I can.
All right. So, Paul's opening as well. We wanted to run that van with a 50 kilowatt hour battery. I think, Paul, you can correct me, but I think it was 45 kilowatt hour usable. And we put 200 kilograms of sand in the back, two drivers, and some luggage for the week, you know. So we did actually get it weighed. And on the front axle, we had 90 kg spare. And I think, forget what we had on the back, but effectively we were carrying 65% payload across the vehicle with axles okay on each axle. So that for me was kind of real world for a small city van running around and doing what it needed to do. So on day one, we ran it in the parameters that you'd expect, 20 to 80% battery range, you know, and we planned our stops, you know, for roughly we're going to get about 110 miles, we thought. And we noticed after the couple of charges of the first day that actually in that range of it actually worked out more 30 to 80 by the time where our stops were, it wouldn't pull more than 60 kilowatts charging, and potentially that vehicle should be doing 100, you know, that's its capacity. And we consistently charged it on 150 kilowatt charges. We wanted to do a bit of a test to try and minimize the number of variables by different charges. And it wouldn't pull. And we found we were sat there for quite a long time. What we also discovered was actually the range kind of depleted on a consistent basis. So if we left with a certain range showing on the dashboard and we wanted to get to point X, 110 miles away, do you know what? We did, and it kept going. So that started to build a bit of confidence about, okay, so let's see what happens when we push this to single figure miles left on the charging. And again, the van performed, I have to say, admirably. It really did keep us. We at no point did we start seeing range fluctuating wildly that gave us a lack of confidence. But then what did surprise us was we stuck it on, it was actually the first one was at FMG, and we stuck it on a 150 with 9 miles of range. So about 7%, I think it was, that was left in the battery. And it jumped straight to that 100%. It was at 97 kilowatts and it held it. Now, what did that mean from an operational perspective? Actually, when we looked at the mid-range charging that we did to put the same number of miles in, we found ourselves with a 50-minute dwell time. Every time we run it down into the below the 10% and putting the same number of miles in, because we sort of aimed for 130 miles each time so that we could plan our routes, we were finding ourselves at 28, 29 minutes rough on average charging. So now that's 20 minutes. Now, if I'm thinking about an operational vehicle, you know, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, you know, multiply that through a fleet, that starts to have significant implication to productivity, you know, as on a business level. So that's the bit that I've taken back. Actually, do we really need to start understanding how these different vehicles operate, and both from a a discharge perspective, a state of charge, you know, where does the risk, like, can we help drivers be really confident that if you run this vehicle to 10 miles at a charge point, you will be okay. You know, it's not just going to suddenly disappear. But also what happens with the charging, you know?
It also means as well with those... Sorry, I was going to say, it also means with those areas, you're also now into the realms where you can charge within their 30-minute rest breaks, you know, because it's mandatory to have at least a minimum of 30 minutes. So, you know, so it means you're in that area rather than having to go 50, 60, 70 minutes, which then impacts, as Richard said, on the day. So again, It also means you can have the safety element where you can get people to have their rest periods. And, you know, because we see in these industries, the types of vans that Richard was driving, they don't often take their breaks as well. And our data will often tell them you need to take your breaks because you're doing a 9-10 hour day and you're not taking a proper stop. So it should hopefully help encourage safer driving if you can get the right optimum.
I was thinking of this kind of wider messaging because, you know, one of the critical elements, and Rich has touched on it there, you know, productivity. We know that if people are having to stop to charge, then you're losing time. Is productivity a key focus for you at Webfleet?
It's building on it.
Sorry, Richard. That wasn't the question. That was a question for James. I clearly said,
right. Yeah. Sorry.
You be quiet. Get back in the box.
I didn't hear the James.
It was a time before the question, wasn't it? So, no, I think productivity has always got to be important. And we've seen it with businesses at the AFP conference. I think, you know, you would have been at the AFP conference this year, Paul. And, you know, we were discussing there. Yeah, everyone up on stage was talking about how productivity is harming their transitions. So they, you know, many of them are still avoiding certain areas because it's just not there yet. And that's what we're trying to get to them is you can be productive. It just needs more planning. And the planning comes from the data that everyone can provide. So it's about, okay, let's take that. And this also comes through partnership because actually where we differentiate ourselves and we see in the market is actually whether it's through our local reseller partners or whether it's through Webfleet directly, it becomes a partnership with the customer and an education on what we're delivering to them. And that's where it comes, because otherwise you have all the tools and you never get shown how to use them and you never make any changes. So one of the things that, you know, Richard did do before he was in the EV consultant role was really add value to those customers by going and speaking to them. And they would often say to him at the end of, you know, what was effectively a sales pitch, you know, and those things, can you come and spend 20 minutes with me talking about operations and those other areas, because he was bringing that value. And that's what we see now more and more with the data that we start to present to people.
But this is the critical piece, isn't it? Because people are saying it won't work or it can't work or it's a struggle, but they're saying it because they don't have the insight that they need. And this is the stuff. I mean, it's a great fact that I will definitely be using. Find that optimum window of the vehicle if you ever need to charge in the public domain. And everybody that knows me knows that I say vans should never be in that public domain world. But I think it's really important. John?
Yes, my friend. It was something that James spoke about. And it was about the people who had never used an electric vehicle that you took on the rally. So, James, for you, a question.
I've got it. Don't worry.
What was the feedback predominantly that you got from people with their first time using an electric vehicle?
Well, it was, again, like we see so many times, it was really positive. Everyone knows Alan, our marketing manager extraordinaire, that was his first real experience at length of driving an electric vehicle. He's already said when it comes to his renewal, he'll be ordering one, you know, because he hasn't done that with the family.
He's ordered it.
Has he? Oh, there we go.
He's ordered it.
So
he's ordered his EV.
So and that was him. We had Josh also on the marketing team that does our content. You know, it was a lot of surprise, wasn't there? And we think this is quite strange because we wax lyrical about this and we say, you know, the things. It's almost like people don't believe you. They say, oh, well, maybe you're an EV evangelist and, you know, that's you're always going to say that because that's what you're trying to do. Well, no, it's actually the truth. That's why people talk about it. You know, because actually we're not disingenuous. We're not those sorts of people who are just going to lie through our teeth because we'll get found out. They are better vehicles to drive in so many ways. Yes, you might miss certain things. You might miss the roar of an engine if you're a boy racer that's never going to change. You know, that's things you might miss, those certain aspects. But you know, you're getting what is often a higher tech spec in a vehicle, a better vehicle to drive, a smoother vehicle to drive, and in my experience, much less problems. So and we just saw that with all the people that came along. We had four, I think, out of our team that hadn't driven it before, and all of them were really, really positive.
So I guess it's something about getting bums in seats as an initial first step. It is about go try it for yourself, isn't it? And then you can start to build that level of knowledge based on fact. And that's, I suppose, fundamentally what you do, is you then develop that initial fact base into a whole library of information that people can call on from the data into insights to get them the best transition into EV they can get.
Yeah. If you think about it, John, look, a lot of businesses are dealing with risk every day at the moment. There's inflationary risk. There is competition risk. You know, it's probably as much risk out there as there's been in many, many years. So if you add changing what you've already known in your vehicles into that, you can understand why people are reticent. So actually, for us, it's about how do you de-risk, you know, the change for them? You know, how do you give them the confidence that changing tomorrow and doing something different is going to work out for them? And that comes from the right insight being delivered. Go, here you go. Here's before, here's after. It works. You know, now go and try. Like you say, I think bums on seats. There's no better way of a new driver getting to grips with how nice these things are to drive than getting behind the wheel of one.
It strikes me that you two are really quite passionate and quite focused on these subjects, and my knowledge of you guys over the years has sort of exemplified that, right? Mm-hmm. What is it within your business or within your lives, and you know, just a, this is to both of you actually, Richard, you're allowed, you know, to comment on this,
and James, I'll wait for James.
James can go first. What is it that drives both you and the business to achieve this sort of march towards sustainability?
I think, you know, for us personally, it's about people. We, especially within the Webfleet UK I team, we have a culture, you know, and we are effectively, yes, we are a sales team in many ways. But we have really focused on bringing people on board that are in, you know, they're not extrinsically motivated, they're intrinsically motivated. And actually some of our interview process is making sure that we have, you know, we sort of find out more about the people, because actually you can go through processes, you can go through planning, go through all those other P's, but it's the people that make a difference. And always. Personally, from my side of thing, you know, the reason why I've always followed, you know, the EV Cafe in those areas as well, you see the people make the difference and the passion that you have behind it. We want to make a difference. You know, we when we look at what we talk about in some of our meetings, we actually have a sales message, the internal sales message within Webfleet, which is actually based around sustainable selling as well. Because it's not just about sustainability in other areas, it's about being sustainable, you know, throughout our processes. So, yeah, we really focus in on the people, we really focus in on the change, and we actually now, what's great for me, you know, having, you know, as a sales director, with people coming to me on LinkedIn and through those other messages, they're coming asking us for jobs because they see the message that we're delivering to people and they want to be a part of it. And that's then you feel like you're part of a movement. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, sales is tough. Everyone sees that sort of element, as you all know, I'm being involved. But the reward that comes from actually doing something that's great, you know, at the end of it all, and having a transition piece, that's the part that is, you know, it's just great to be a part of.
Richard, you can speak.
All right.
Yes.
On a personal level, I think for me, it's just been, I've always been interested in geography and the documentaries, and I guess over, like, it started probably about 8 years ago for me personally, and I just started thinking, when you see like the David Attenborough's, like, this is going wrong, there's something happening here, and back to our point, like, what can we do? I could do something, so I can get involved and I learn, and I started working. Actually, it was Chris Chandler who took me along on the way as well with some of the first deals, you know, working closely with him, and that sort of led me to kind of develop that. And actually, to James's point about the EV Cafe, I started with Webfleet 8 weeks before lockdown, And so my real step change into moving to this, because, you know, I didn't know telematics. I came from a fleet background. So what do you do when there's nobody to pick up the phone to? Well, I listen to TV Cafe a lot, and it just started to resonate. And I started to learn, and I started to go, do you know what? This is where my passion lies. I found something. I may have stumbled across it rather than gone looking, but this works for me. So that's where my personal stuff came from. And guess why the business is nice from the business. I started this new role in January, and I promise you there wasn't a job spec. The business said, we need this role. We know it has a purpose. You need to develop it. And I guess that's the trust of an organization in its people to go and do the right thing that is within the mold of the culture of the business and what it wants to achieve in sustainability. So everything that the role is now was my freedom to do what's right for the business and our customers by it. So those are the two things.
Thank Bless you. Your heart. He's good, isn't he? He is good. I do love him. A question for you both. It could be suggested that we are evangelists and we are blinkered. It's fair to say that Webfleet provide data and insights across a mixed fleet. Mm-hmm. And what you're able to do is, for those who are not ready to make that transition, you are mm-hmm. able to help them find efficiencies within their existing fleet, whether that's through route planning, route optimization, or whether that's through having the right vehicles to do the right journey cycles. Mm. So Webfleet has a bit of something for everybody and can take you from where you are now and the trading conditions that you're in and help you to be more profitable, safer, cleaner, and ultimately make that transition. There is something for everybody at Webfleet. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there
that's
is.
That's very kind. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, very one good. Of the things, yeah, we were talking there about, you know, the last 4 years, a lot of people's passion has been sustainability and, you know, and the decarbonization bit. But before that, you know, I was kind of really passionate about the safety piece, you know, and actually the great thing about telematics in the period before that was you were going in with people and you were helping them save lives, you know, because people do have fatalities on the road. You know, 2 years ago when we got to the end of the EV rally, when we were speaking at Maxis, you know, we kind of said the reason we have this safe and sustainable award is there's no point in making vehicles decarbonize and doing everything else that if you then wrap the vehicle around a lamppost or do something damaging with that vehicle, you know, that has a material impact on not just the life of the driver, but the other people involved. So yeah, there is the net zero or the vision zero, as we now see it being talked about, is, you know, is zero emissions and zero lives lost. And we get to work in an industry that does both of that. And that's why I think it's so rewarding.
Yeah. I think the other thing, John, about this the whole bit is around, I was certainly seen in the work that I do that a lot of organizations where perhaps zero emission vehicles aren't either readily available or just from a price point are still, you know, beyond the reach of some organizations, especially in that heavy industry, in the heavy vehicles, is that they are being asked to not only measure their CO2 footprint now, but also deliver action plans. So the beginning of that journey is exactly that. What can you do tomorrow with what you have that makes a difference? You know, and that's where, for a lot of people, actually, it's an easy first step to their road to decarbonization, because all you're asking is to deal with the stuff they already know and understand. Just do it better than you've done before, you know, and you'll make a difference.
And you can't do that with anybody better than a trusted friend like Webfleet.
Well, let's ask our trusted friend one last question. So we sort of have a tradition in the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast, because there's barriers, challenges, there's things that we would wish for. And if you only have one each, because there's two of you, so you get double the allotment that mere ordinary mortals get. What one thing would you change right here, right now, to make a difference for the next year or two in this whole process of transition? And James, you can go first because it's easier.
For me, I think it would be to remove as many barriers to, you know, to getting people access to electric vehicles and charging infrastructure as possible. And I think particularly because I live in a rural area, you know, the rural challenges are one that I think, you know, could really kind of help. Because whilst the cities are important because it's clean air zones and those aspects and it's pollution, you know, if you can prove that the vehicles can work in those rural areas and you can get access to everybody, then the rest have no excuse. And at the moment, it's trying to remove the barriers so you can remove the excuses. So if I could do one thing, I think that's probably what it would be.
Improve the rural situation that so that everybody gets a fair rub of the green, as it were. Very good, Richard.
I would like the government, and I mean central government, to be more truthful about what EVs are and everything, and have a central stance and help educate people. To we spend a lot of time myth busting. Imagine if you could, if centrally the government come out like these vehicles, this charging, this is what we're doing. Have some real, don't sit on the fence anymore. Come out and say this is what we're going to do. I think that would be a massive step forward to people's fear and uncertainty about this moving forward. We've got a brand new government in place. You know, it's got its plans. I'd love to see some actual something come out from them, to be honest. Like the van plan. You know, let's take what's in, you know, in the van plan and, you know, and be vocal about it outwardly from a government. Say this is how we're going to support the country, because I think that will give confidence and consistency for people.
I can't believe you're banging on about vans. Bloody hell. You imagine that, you know, vans. Like, are vans important?
Who would do such a thing?
It's the next problem that we've got to get solved, you know, quite honestly. You know, it's...
I won't tell you what Dean just put in the chat.
that'd be my first choice.
Yeah, but you know, for me it is. I think there's too much ambiguity and contradiction. And I think if we could have government just say this is how it's going to be, I think people would be able to settle on that and move with it. You know, in a bit of a quicker way.
Remove the FUD, wouldn't it? If we could get rid of that FUD and get people moving forward, that would be great.
That's no way to speak about Richard.
I think it's
different meaning Scotland FUD.
Indeed.
Anyway,
don't look it up. Whatever you do, don't look it up.
It seems like a good point to end. In fact, we might edit this out. The end's a minute earlier. Anyway, listen, Richard, James, it's been fantastic to have you guys join us, and also to see the value of things like the Green Fleet Rally and how that brings data and insight that will make a difference in all of the markets that we're seeking to serve within this transition, be they bikes, cars, vans, trucks, old, new, everything was covered. And you guys have been able to capture an absolute goldmine of data. So, and I'm turning it already into insight that will make a difference. That is very, very good news in my book, especially for the beloved vans. Absolutely. Anyway, listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Please do connect with Richard and James on LinkedIn and follow the company Webfleet. Just kind of get absorb everything that is going on with them. And of course, you know, follow us at the EV Cafe if you're not already. And you can see that Richard, we owe Richard's entire existence to the EV Cafe because we But so sorry, everybody. We apologize profusely. But it's been a joy to chat with James and Richard. Thank you so much to you both. And John, we've had a good time, haven't we?
We always do. But what's key is we made a difference too. Somebody somewhere will listen to these guys and say, do you know what? I should give that Richard guy a call. He seems to know what he's talking about.
And James too. Yes.
I don't.
James is a director. He doesn't speak to people.
I will always speak to people. We would love, if we hear from people, it's the best thing. You know, if we can hear from people, help people, absolutely. It doesn't need to be about telematics. Yeah. It could just be about the setup. So thank you for today as well. It's been great.
Yes, thank you.
Great stuff.
No, seriously, you guys are brilliant. It's with pride that we work with you guys. It's a genuine honour. We worked hard to make sure we were good enough to work with you. And I hope we will continue to do so for a long time.
Absolutely.
Right, can we finish now?
Yes.
Shall we?
Thank you, everybody.
Cheers.
Right, order in this house. Yes, check in to the EV Cafe takeaway, the podcasts, all of them are online for your listening delectation, or YouTube, of course, where you can watch us as well. Probably stick with listening if you've got any wisdom at all.
A weak stomach.
Yeah, dude. But until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to chatting with you again soon. Have a great day, everybody.